pain mean?
Yeah, what?
Yeah, I didn't know.
What is it?
Given. Okay, 564. Pirk Dalet, Pirk Yobas. Pirk Dalet. 564. Pirkei Avos. This contemporary, what are you looking for?
Yeah.
Well, I do it once a week, I do Pirkei Avos. I don't know what anybody else does. 564. Ben Zoma Omer. Ben Zoma was the name, one of the Tanaim, Shimon Ben Zoma, not to be confused with a Hebrew curse. That was his name, Ben Zoma. Right. Ben Zoma Omer, who is the wise man? Halomed mikol adam, one who learns from everybody. Shenamar mikol malamde yiskalti. We quote a pasuk to support it. A wise man is one. How do you determine? How do you define a wise man? Izu chacham halomed mikol adam. Shenamar mikol malamde yiskalti. There is siddurim over there. Page 564. That means we think of wisdom. When you think of wisdom, you think of somebody who's wise. Wisdom is generally somebody who's accumulated the wisdom. You see, somebody who's accumulated wisdom may actually be putting a limit on his wisdom, because often people who are smart don't want to hear from other people. And when you're smart, you don't want to hear from other people. So then you're by definition putting a limit on how smart you can become or how wise you can become. The true wise man, Ezu Chacham, on page 564. In the Siddur, the true wise man is one who learns from everybody, because then there's no limit to your wisdom. Because if you're willing to learn from everybody, then everybody's got something they could teach you. You can learn from animals, you can learn from people. There's everybody you can learn from. In Shlomo Melech writes, you learn from ants, and you can learn from cats, and you can learn from all sorts of things. So Ezu Chacham. How low made me call Adam, who's willing to learn from everybody, that is a truly wise man, because then there's no limit to his wisdom. Ezu Gibor, who is a strong man. Right? Strength is something everybody's impressed with. Right? And, you know, if you can pump iron, or if you can you know, beat people up, or whatever it is, and strength is always something that people are impressed with, physical strength. The true strength, Ezu Gibor, Hakobish Yisro, somebody who conquers his inclination. Tov erech apayim gibor umushal berochu melochet ir. Better is erech apayim, means somebody who doesn't get angry, who controls his temper, is greater than he's better than a strong man. Umushal berochu, one who rules his spirit, melochet ir, one who captures a city. To control yourself, the true strength and character in life, right? Much harder than building yourself up physically. Is to build yourself up and to have the strength of character to control yourself. Right? If you're looking for one theme, if you had to look for one central theme that runs through the Torah, start to finish, the central theme of Torah, what would it be? One theme runs start to finish in the entire Torah. You could use one word description, one adjective description of the Torah. What is the central theme of the Torah? What would you say it is?
Control,
self-control, self-control. Everything you look at in Torah is self-control, right? How you talk, how you look, how you eat, how you behave. Everything about Torah is self-control. The goal of Torah is not to see the prohibitions of Torah as an obstacle course, which we have to circumvent. Certain people see that there are 613 commands. And certain things, people see 613 problems. One person looks and he sees 613 mitzvahs. Another person sees 613 problems. Right? 613 problems means that, okay, we have a problem now of meat and milk. Max, there's a more siddurim over there. There's a problem of meat and milk. Okay, we've taken care of the problem of meat and milk. Now we can have soy meat with dairy cheese, or we could have real meat with parva cheese, right? You know. So we've taken care of the problem of meat and milk. Okay, what else? What other problems have we got? Okay, we got a problem with pork. Okay, we now have bacon for breakfast. There's kosher bacon. Okay, we've taken care of that problem. You miss the theme of Torah. The theme of Torah is not meant to be an obstacle course. We're trying to circumvent the problems as opposed to accepting in ourselves the command, understanding what God ultimately wants. He doesn't want us to unleash all of our desires just within the framework of certain rules. Okay, Shabbos comes around, you know, oh great, Shabbos, here comes the chonk. Yeah, you know, roll up your sleeves and go to it. You know, you're supposed to enjoy Shabbos, you're supposed to enjoy, that's why there is food and we all enjoy food and you enjoy eating. But there's a difference between enjoying it and making a project out of it, right? And in the Torah, the whole theme of the Torah is outside. And therefore, certainly somebody gets angry, right? You know, to control that anger, right? It takes a tremendous strength of character to go. They had a report in the paper a little while ago. A guy was going to be released from jail after 25 years in prison. And on the day he was meant to be released, he had to go and get he had to make a phone call. He called home. The day he was going to be released, he had called home. So he goes over to the public phone, and there's some guy who's on the phone. The guy was a bit edgy because he was supposed to leave prison. He says, "Do you mind, I want to make you a call." He says, "Well, just watch it. Just wait a second." He says, "Well, I need to get away." And a fight broke out. He ended up, punching me. I killed him. Right. So, then he used the phone. I said, "Sorry, there's been a change of plans. I'll see you in another 25 years. You can't control yourself. The tremendous strength of character. The greatest show of strength is to be able to control yourself, whatever the area of life is. Sometimes the greatest show of strength is somebody says something to you to not answer back. It takes tremendous strength of character. So the Mishnah, Ezu Gibor Akovish, is easy to conquer your inclination. That's the greatest strength. Anybody who's ever been in a situation where self-control is required, and that guy decides, today I had two pieces of cake, no more. I want that third piece of cake, but I'm not going to, I'm going to get, it's torture. But if you ever are able to walk away from it, afterwards you feel wonderful, but at the moment it's torture. Yeah.
Like smoking,
for instance? Smoking is tremendously difficult. If you're able to walk away from it, you're a gibor. You're a tremendous gibor. But see, I think that there's a tendency, there's an unfair tendency that people pick on smokers. I think there's a tendency non-smokers pick on smokers, where it's one thing if a guy smokes around the other people. It's annoying. He's annoying people. You're not supposed to smoke around other people. It bothers them. The smoke bothers other people. But in general, people think, "Oh, these guys smoking." First of all, most people who start smoking when they're idiots, right? When they're 16, 15, 14, when they're not even at a stage of life. You don't know anybody who started smoking after 20 years old. Nobody starts smoking after they're 20 years old. Everybody who starts smoking is when they're at the most vulnerable stage of life, when they're absolute fools, right? 14, 15, impressionable to peer pressure, right? By the time they get to be, by the time they're intelligent, they've got a very serious chemical addiction. And so it's really unfair, because by the time they are mature enough to make the decision to stop smoking, they've got a serious chemical addiction, right? It's like telling somebody stop drinking coffee, right? Most people are, people are the same guy who could criticize somebody else for smoking cigarettes, he himself is drinking coffee. And the third guy's got an addiction to gambling. And another guy's got an addiction to goodness knows what. One has to, before judging other people, and I know because I was a smoker, right? Yeah, and smoking, there's nothing in the world that's difficult. I had to stop because, it was either that or be single, right? So, which wasn't such an easy choice, by the way. One of my biggest mistakes I ever made. But you have to understand, when do people start smoking? People start smoking when they're foolish, and by the time you're a little smarter, now you've got a very, very serious chemical addiction, right? And so it's one thing. The reason people are so passionately against cigarettes. People say, "Well, because you're killing yourself." That's not why they're against it. They're passionately against it because your habit is bothering me. That's why people are passionately against it. I got to care less what you do. The same guy who criticizes somebody else's irresponsible smoking, he thinks nothing of driving 20 miles an hour above the speed limit, right? Which statistics have shown that you're seriously endangering yourself and other people. They have statistical proof for that. So all these addictions and all these things, yes, but somebody who can walk away from the cigarette, or somebody who can walk away from peer pressure, or somebody who can turn down drugs or alcohol or whatever it is, yes, that is the truest strength of character. That is the truest thing here. Jeremy, go ahead.
I heard recently the Arizal said that is kedusha. That holiness is when the degree that you go against your instincts and your desires.
Of course. Because because the whole Torah is Kedusha. The Torah is going against your instincts and desires. You see, animals live on instincts. Human beings don't live on instincts. That's ultimately what Adam's Avera was. What was that real Avera? What was the Avera of Chava? The snake comes to Chava and appeals to Chava to go in and eat from the forbidden fruit, which was not an apple, by the way. But the snake comes to Chava to eat from the forbidden fruit. What's really going on there? What's going on there? Snake talked. He didn't talk. What's really going on there? The answer is that you see, the snake represents the animal in man. The snake represents the animal in man. Animals, for the most part, in the animal world, what do animals live based on? Animals simply live based on an instinct. And the most basic animalistic instinct is, if it looks good and I'm hungry, you partake. If a lion goes chasing a zebra, poor zebras, a lion goes chasing a zebra. So I'm sure you've all seen films of, the Wild Kingdom and all these things, and all you think he has, yeah, come on, man, a little self-control, leave that zebra, the tiger goes chasing a deer, he finally nails this little deer, and all you're thinking of that poor deer, yeah, remember, the tiger and the lion are not thinking, at no point does the lion think to himself, you're behaving like an animal. At no point does a leopard go. He thinks himself, you better not, because then you'll be flacix for 6 hours. You won't be able to have coffee later on. At no point is there. People are willing to, a human being. And I sit down. It's unbelievable what people are willing to give up for that much milk 6 hours later. It's amazing. I made some steak. There's steak and roast beef and some fried chicken. No, because I don't want to become flacix. First of all, you don't become place. It's not a conversion. It's not a group that you're joining. It'll change later. You're not going to become anything. And what am I giving up? So I'm giving all that up so that later on in this cup I can put in exactly that much coffee. I don't want to sacrifice. This is amazing what we're willing to get for one cup of coffee, right? An animal is working. A guy once asked me an interesting question. There was a story about a guy who fell into shark-infested waters, I think in the Gulf of Mexico. And he was surrounded by a ring of sharks. And then a ring of dolphins, a group of dolphins fight sharks. And the dolphins, what they do is they actually bash themselves as they go zapping themselves at the shark, bashing the shark's fins. Right? They gang fight. They smash the shark's fins so that the shark eventually just drowns. Because he can't breathe, right? He can't breathe underwater. A shark just goes, sinks to the bottom of the water. And my brother was going to be an oceanographer, right? And then he changed, and he went off to Israel to Yeshiva. And, he went, became an extremist, fundamentalist, fanatic himself also. So he was going to be an oceanographer. This guy knows to this day, he knows everything about animals that he possibly knows. He told me that the dolphins, this is remarkable, the dolphins, when they go for a shark, they'll actually send out a dolphin as a decoy. Where you get a group of dolphins, and they'll send one dolphin out as a decoy. The shark will come out, go after that dolphin, and the rest of the dolphins will gang up on the shark, right? Which is just amazing. I always wondered how they decide who the decoy is going to be. Okay, Marvin. Hey, no, I did it last time. It does Bert's turn this time. I don't know exactly who wants to go be a decoy to go chase and get chased by a shark, right? And then they go and they smash the shark, and the shark now. So this guy would jump into the water, and he was surrounded by the dolphins. The dolphins beat off the sharks. They beat up the sharks, and they surrounded him and brought him, escorted him to dry land. So the guy asked me, do the dolphins get rewarded for that in the world to come? It's a good question. Did the dolphins get a reward for that in the world to come? What would you say? Why not? It's an instinct. They haven't done anything. All they've done is all dolphins instinctively. Remember, we only have the guy's story. Let's say the guy's story is accurate. For all you know, he may have fallen in right in the middle of a rumble as it was. But let's say that's what they did. They surrounded him, protected him. But that's an instinct. It's purely an instinct.
Is that why the frogs in the Marcos who jumped and the others were rewarded?
That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question because it says that the dogs in Egypt were also... I'll get to you one second. It says that the dogs did not wag their tongues at the Jew. They got rewarded for it. The commentaries ask, why should they be rewarded? They're only behaving based on an instinct. And the commentators explain, the Torah is rewarding them to teach us what the reward is when you do. For sure, those frogs are only behaving based on an instinct. It's not a free will. There's no manifestation of free will there. Therefore, there's no deserving of reward. The reward that the dogs are given, the reward the frogs are, all of that, a good question. It's all to teach us what the reward is if you carry out God's will. Yeah. Question.
How about like humans that have like bipolar disease or like something like that? That like they act on instinct, but like
good.
If they didn't have that disease, they probably wouldn't be.
That's a good question. That's a good question. That's ultimately where we can get to. What happens is that the snake, speaking to Chava, he's telling Chava, now listen. You, and according to the commentary, the animal man, it's our own mind. It's your own mind. What am I? Am I a human being with free choice? Or am I simply a more sophisticated two-legged animal? So the human being with free choice says, listen, it looks good, it smells good, and it probably tastes good. Which means that everything about it, based on my instincts, means I should partake in this fruit. There's only one thing. There's a command not to do it. Command means that there's a meant to be an activation of your free choice not to do it. Because that's a command. What is a command? Command, by definition, means, yes, exercise your free choice, don't exercise your free choice. There's a command not to do it. So the snake looks, the Chava looks at the fruit. Now there's a battle going on. What am I? Am I some sort of creature that has free choice and there's a concept of right and wrong? Or am I simply an animal? And an animal says, if it looks good, smells good, and tastes good, so why not? This is what you're built, made to live on instincts. That's the battle. That's the snake is the animal and man saying, all you are is really another animal. You're just a more sophisticated, you're an animal who knows how to talk. That's all you are. Therefore, what do you mean? What kind of nonsense is that? Something, you mean on ideals? It's like a lion not taking part, not eating a zebra. He's hungry, and he has the animal, and he's not going to eat a zebra simply because he feels, you know what, it's wrong. Right? You're never going to find that by a law. So what kind of nonsense is that? Don't eat the forbidden fruit. That's the battle that she's going through. Where's the extension of that? The extension of exactly what you're asking. You know, a human being, my instincts, all of my instincts, you say bipolar disease, right? We don't have to be that dramatic. You know, all of my instincts say, take something that belongs to somebody else because I want it. All of my instincts say that, and it's a very natural instinct. If it's available, if I find something on the street, I don't want to return it. If I see something in your pocket, if there's a bulging wallet in your pocket, I want to take it. That's all of my instincts say I want to take it. All of my instincts, that's basic human instinct. Right? Comes along the Torah says, sorry, you have an instinct, you're going to have to control your instinct. The argument that many people who are, this is one of the most common arguments, is that somebody, for instance, who is a homosexual, or has homosexual tendencies. Well, listen, that's the way I was created. What do you want? That's my instinct. That's my tendency. That's my nature. Okay? Another guy says, my nature is to commit adultery. And quite frankly, that's the nature of most men. The nature of most men is to be immoral. Far more men have a nature to be immoral than they have a nature to be homosexual. Right? There's far more men. That's very natural. Right? Torah says you're going to have to control that. Many people have a nature to take that which belongs to somebody else. That's a basic human desire to take what I want. If I can get it for free, why should I pay for it? Right? And I have not only have the nature for it, I can be a very good pickpocket. An incredible skill to pull something out of somebody else's pocket. Not me personally, but I do admire it. Yeah? That's something. You know, be able to bump into somebody and just take something out of his pocket. That's great. You can make it part enough so much. Much easier way. The bus driver driving a truck. Right? The driver says, sorry, you can't do that. You're going to have to go against your instinct. So whatever example you come up with, some cases are going to be more difficult, some cases are going to be less difficult. At the end of the day, you have to control it. Now, somebody who is completely out of control, somebody who is mentally unstable, or somebody who doesn't care, so God does not make unreasonable demands. A two-year-old child, an adult who's got some sort of medical condition where they cannot, what's it called, where people cannot control their stealing?
Kleptomania.
Now I don't know enough about the subject to know whether it is a clinical thing or it's just an extreme person who's just extremely not controlled. I don't know if it crosses the line where it is some sort of chemical imbalance that causes a person to, I don't know anything about the subject. Let's say there is such a thing where a person has genuinely got like somebody says, I eat trafe. I'm clinically a trafer. Yeah, I can't get out of that. Well, at a certain point, we have to determine what at what point do you become determined clinically out of control. You understand? Whatever that line is, let's say there is somebody who is truly cannot control them. They see something, they've got to take it. So then God's not going to, there are no unreasonable demands. That's obviously, it's beyond his control. There's a certain point where God says, well, that's beyond your control. You've got a person who's mentally retarded. It cannot be expected to control themselves. If a person's got certain drives which they cannot control, which they literally cannot control, and only God knows when you're expected. So the Gemara says that openly, that God does not come with unreasonable demands. God does not make unreasonable demands. Like, but everybody is expected to exercise everything they can to exercise as much self-control as possible.
To what extent is a snake metaphorical?
There are different opinions in the Talmud about whether or not different among the commentaries. There's a literal level, but the Torah is always trying to teach you in the literal level. It's always trying to teach you something symbolic as well.
On the metaphorical level, what was the significance of God's punishment?
On a metaphorical level, it's difficult to say. How you carry that out, that I don't know. Right, because when there's a metaphor, the metaphor isn't going to be airtight all the way through. Right? The metaphor level, because obviously there was some sort of literal level of a snake. What that is exactly, we don't know. But there's certainly an idea of being of an instinct in man, the natural instinct. When we talk about the evil inclination, is just the basic instinct that you have. Your basic instincts are the evil inclination. That's a good question. Yeah.
Brother
Izzy
once said that a society without civilized.
That's exactly what the goal is. The goal is that I want to follow my instincts. And if there's a creator that suddenly creates obligations, that's very annoying. That interferes with what I want to do. Exactly correct. Okay, that's Ezu Gibora Kovach Yisrael. Now the next one is Ezu Usher, who is a wealthy man. Hasameach b'chalko, somebody who is happy with his portion. Shenemar yagia kapecha kitzochal ashrecha v'tovlach. The yagia kapecha kitzochal means that you consume the work of your hands, then you will be fortunate and happy. It'll be good for you. Ashrecha b'olam hazeh v'tovlach l'olam haba. You'll be fortunate in this world, and it'll be good for you in the world to come. In other words, how do you define wealth? Everybody wants to be rich. Right? People say, no, I don't want that test. Yes, you do. Everybody wants a test. Everybody wants a test of wealth. As much as we know intellectually that's a difficult test, right? But if there is a test that we have to have, we would love the test of wealth, right? Much more a test of poverty, even though wealth is a much more difficult test. Why do people want wealth? People sense that wealth will grant them they can basically get what you want when you're wealthy and you don't have to worry about anything, so on and so forth. If you look around you find that that's not what happens. If you look around the world, you see that wealth is generally something that people are frustrated when they're wealthy. Right? Wealth brings about all sorts of other desires, and wealthy person's frustrated they don't have more money. The Mishnah is telling you an important lesson. The Mishnah is telling you, if you want to be, call it whatever you want, use the word happy, content, fulfilled, whatever word you want, your happiness, contentment, fulfillment cannot be based on something material. That's what the lesson of the Mishnah is. It doesn't hurt if you're happy with a little bit. Chances are you're going to be happy with a lot as well. It's certainly convenient. But don't confuse convenience. It's definitely more convenient to be wealthy. Don't confuse conveniences with fulfillment and contentment. Like, yes, you can be a lot of conveniences. People have tremendous conveniences. The fact they have a convenience, I'll give you an example, even from the Torah world. You know that people have a convenience called a Pesach kitchen. There are people who have a Pesach kitchen where they push a button, and the floor of a relative, they push a button. The entire floor, the kitchen, is built on the whole kitchen is built on a swivel where it turns around, and it conceals the room. Yeah, the whole thing turns around. Last time I saw this was Batgirl on TV. Where she pushes the thing and it turns around, and there's a room behind there that's hidden. As they build a Pesach kitchen, so you don't have to wait for Pesach. It's very convenient. Do you think that's going to make you happier? Right? A person who goes and cleans the house for Pesach, you sit down at the Seder after working for a week and cleaning the house, there's a certain sense of satisfaction and fulfillment. You're going into Pesach. The other way is definitely more convenient. So what? Who says we want everything to be convenient? It's much more convenient to have painters come into your house and paint the walls. Right? Somebody who goes and paints for 3 days and paints their own walls, there's a tremendous sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. your happiness, your fulfillment, your satisfaction is not necessarily proportional to your convenience. In the old days, when you had to go and work and you had to cook and you had to grind and you had to do everything in the house, it was a tremendous sense of fulfillment and accomplishment. Nowadays, everything's a button. Push a button, push another button, it pushes all the button, everything's done. Right? So where's there room for satisfaction and fulfillment? Is it convenient? Yeah, but convenience is the biggest mistake people make. Another convenience and another convenience and another. So what? So everything's convenient. So what? Where did all the convenience lead you to? No one says there's certainly a certain minimal amount of convenience we need. You got to have a car. You got to. But if it's everything is convenient, that does not necessarily equal happiness. That's what the Mishnah is teaching you. And if you look around you, you will find that, ironically, it's the people who have learned an attitude where they seem to be the most happy and fulfilled people because they're not expecting to find that satisfaction through the material world. And the people who are looking for it in the material world are the people who often are the most frustrated. By the way, you can't listen to everything in terms of, boy, if only my family members would hear this. You know, sometimes people listen. People listen to everything in terms of, boy, I just wish my parents would hear this. I wish my brothers would hear this. I wish my family members would hear this. You can't. It's not going to have the same effect as it does on you, right? So these people, Baal Shuvahs, often understand things in terms of, oh, my family, right? It doesn't. You know, the family. You have to leave the family. This is for us. We need the constant reminder because we are always susceptible to this. No matter how much we understand, how much we know it, we still get to stages in life where, oh boy, if only, no. If you're already looking at if only, you better focus on what you got right now. Focus on what you got right now, because otherwise, the other thing that you have will only satisfy you for a short period of time. Ezu mechubad, and who is the honored person? People look for honor in life. Everybody's looking for honor and prestige. Ezu mechubad, who is a truly honored person? Hamechabedes abriyas, one who honors other people. Those that honor me, I will honor. Those that scorn me, I will. They will be degraded. That's how I translate it. That means like this: what is honor? Right? Your honor, your president of the United States. Right? Would you say the president is honored? I don't think he's honored. I think he's the center of attention. He gets a tremendous amount of attention. If that's what you want, yeah, you can be the president of the United States. You get a tremendous amount of attention. Is the president honored? I think that if you talk to most of his cabinet ministers in a moment, if you talk to the members of the cabinet, and you got them privately and get them in a moment of truth, I think they might have a criticism or two to make of the president. Who is it you really honor in life? If you stop and think about who you honor somebody who honors you. Right? When you really think of somebody, the people you think positive of are people who show honor to other people. Those are people who are really honored. Other people, I mean, there's certainly, we stand up when the president walks in, we have to stand up for him. You know, Mr. President, you know, you talk to him in third grade, you know, so on and so forth. You really honor him? You certainly make him the center of attention, and you superficially honor him. That's not right. You don't think, do people really honor Bill Clinton? Is Bill Clinton a person who is looked up to with honor? Right? Bill Clinton certainly is looked on with a certain amount of derision. Like, we certainly, you know, look up to the position while he managed to get himself elected. Right? But on an individual level, when you get to know the individual, you know, and the more an individual demands honor of you, the more you mutter under your breath, the more you curse him under your breath. The one who makes the fewest demands on you, he's the person you genuinely honor. Yeah, so the Mishnah is telling you, and again, when it comes to the wealth, the Mishnah is telling you, don't just think of this in ideal terms. Yes, if you're satisfied with what you have, then you're a wealthy person. But we all know it's the money that counts. That's why the Mishnah says you'll be happy in this world and in the world to come, because the true fulfillment of your wealth will also be in this world. Now, it doesn't mean that a person therefore should not try to. You want to accumulate money, and you've got the right attitude, so good. You can use it for even bigger and better things. But it's not that alone which is standing. If a person says, you know what, I'm not happy right now, and the thing that stands between me and my happiness. A little bit more money, then you're making a mistake on that budget. Okay.